Welcome to the Solid Verbal. The Solid
Verbal. Come after me! I'm a man! I'm 40!
I've heard so many players say, well, I want to be happy. You want to be happy for a day? Eat a steak.
It's that woo woo!
And now, Dan and Ty.
Welcome back to the Solid Verbal, boys and girls. Ty Hildebrand here. Dan Rubenstein.
Yeah.
He's back over there. Beautiful New York City, back from the left coast. I'm surprised
nice
he came back.
New York, yeah, no, it was nice when I got back. It was a little bit rainy last night when I got in, but today was a nice day in the East Coast.
How was your trip?
Good trip. Spent some time with the folks in Southern California.
Yeah.
And just relaxing and, you know, had a like nice little barbecue for the birthday because I'm 25 now, Ty.
Yeah, I heard. Congratulations.
It's pretty special. And then had a wedding, West Coast Kevin, actually.
He went through with it?
He tied the knot with his beautiful bride, Katie, went through with it. It was a great time. There were sheep in a meadow nearby. It was on the ocean, on the coast in Northern California. I was texting with you, actually, during the dinner because I needed a ruling on the utensil portion of the wedding prop bet list that you made up for
us. So now let me ask you this, because I sent you the, I mean, you know I'm a little off, so whatever.
Absolutely.
I sent you the list of wedding props, unannounced. Mm-hmm. You didn't request them.
Correct.
It was a huge hit. Did you use them at all, and was it successful?
Used it, went through it with all the groomsmen before he walked down the aisle. Talked about it the night before at the rehearsal dinner with some friends that were in the wedding. It was a big hit, and I can't fully say that the flower girl got spooked, but there was hesitation.
Okay.
And everybody in the wedding party was like,
Right.
But ultimately, she made her way down the aisle. The songs, a good portion of the songs came through. I don't know if there were Justin Timberlake songs. That was one of your 1.5 was the over-under on JT songs.
Got to go 1.5, yeah.
I don't think they played any JT, so the under hit there. Both of the maid of honor and the best man speeches went over.
Okay.
The minute 59 that you put it at. His brother was sort of a shy, nervous guy, so he was sort of cracking jokes to ease the nerves. So he went about 5 minutes.
Yeah, yeah.
Maid of honor did not cry.
Wow.
Here's the thing. She's like a very experienced, very, very good teacher.
Yeah,
so her skills as a speaker really came through for her.
Did you say it was a sister?
The sister was the maid of honor.
Wow, and she didn't cry. Good for her.
Did not cry. It, like, she spoke like she was giving a TED Talk.
Wow.
She was a total pro.
Okay, that's an upset.
Also, a significant wingspan.
Okay.
I'm trying to think of the other no fist fights,
that's
no
good.
Drunken puking, no big arguments. So that 50-pointer didn't hit. It was a pretty by-the-book wedding. It was, you had the over-under of utensils was pretty perfect, though.
That's the secret right there, because you've usually got two forks.
Yep.
You've usually got two spoons. There's usually a butter knife of some sort. And then there is a miscellaneous utensil.
Wild card.
Right? So 5.5 to me feels like the right number. Sometimes you
maybe
can shift it.
Maybe a shrimp cocktail fork.
Yeah, there's all a mini butter knife in addition to a full-sized one.
Correct.
In your case.
Like, or maybe like a steak cutting knife, one of a sharper ridged edge.
Right. There's always something to make it a little bit unique.
Right.
And I have never seen, what is that even considered?
It was a honeycomb stick, an applicator for a small, but here's the thing. It was a novelty, like gift, tiny little jar of honey.
Right.
With the couple's initials on it, which sure, why not? But it tied to it with a ribbon was like, if you can imagine like a 3-inch wooden rod attached to a honeycomb looking thing to apply the honey to a roll or dinner or whatever, if you wanted honey somewhere.
Yeah.
And there were dinner rolls, and that's not unheard of to put honey on rolls. And I did apply the honey to my roll with the honeycomb.
That puts you at 6 then. You hit the over.
So that was 6.
I've never seen that kind of utensil, but I think in that instance, it has to count as the over.
I feel like it does. And it was very controversial. But ultimately, I think we went with the over with that one.
Well, I'm glad you had a good time. I'm glad you're back. This is good to have
good
you
wedding.
Back. Yeah.
Dance real weird to blurred lines.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I can see that.
Yeah.
All right. Well, it's good to have you back. We have Bruce Feldman on in just a little bit to talk some Pac-12 football with us. Dan, while you were gone, I had planned a recording one large podcast with Kyle King from Fighting Like Cats and Dogs, the author of that book, and Mike Frank, my good friend over at Irish Sports Daily. But it just ran long, and I figured, well, I don't want to subject people to Notre Dame stuff if they don't want it, because people bitch and moan about that all the time.
Right.
So I split it up into two, and I figure if we start with Notre Dame, we can get that out of the way, and then we can move naturally into other previews.
Teams that people care about.
Sure.
Yeah.
So tonight, we've got the Pac-12, and we've invited Bruce on. He's going to talk about a number of teams in the Pac-12 with us. Should be fun.
I'm excited. Knowledge. Right.
If you are interested in providing feedback, solidverbal@gmail.com is the email address. Also, hit us up on Twitter. Our handle is @solidverbal. And do like the Facebook page. You know, the season's only about a month away now, Dan. Tell your friends, share our page. Let's get more people in on the action. We'll post questions. We'll keep the train rolling over at the Facebook page. It's been fun so far. More people, the merrier. Please do head on over to facebook.com/solidverbal, and we'll keep the conversation rolling even when the games aren't being played.
I think that's a grand idea.
All right. Well, without further ado, we are pleased to welcome back to the Solid Verbal. You know him from CBSSports.com and CBS, the television network. Mm. He, of course, is the one and only Bruce Feldman. Bruce, welcome back. How are you?
I'm doing good, guys. How you doing?
Doing well. I understand you just saw my co-host recently out on the left coast.
I did. I went out to a bar in Manhattan Beach, so it was kind of trendy, and who would I spot but Dan Rubenstein?
Did you spot him unannounced, or was this a prearranged?
I guess he goes there to just try to meet women, apparently.
Okay.
It's a pretty significant cougar hunt.
Right.
And that's the point of my life, where I'm currently residing, where that's what I do. I go home, I go to the South Bay, and it's just cougar o'clock all the time.
So now, he didn't take you to a supermarket like he did with me in Austin, did he?
That's a great Whole Foods.
Well, be that as it may, no. It was it was actually a planned thing. So we kind of rendezvoused after his junket to the West Coast. And I think Dan was probably dressed a little differently for what was going on there. But
this is true.
It was good.
All right. Well, we're here to talk some Pac-12 football. And let's start with USC, because a lot in the Pac-12 often starts with USC. You know, I was thinking on the way over here, for the last decade at the quarterback position for USC, it's been a revolving door of superstars, really. Barkley, Sanchez, Leinart, Palmer. This year, though, it's not like the reputation precedes the quarterback, whoever he might be. This is still a really good team, and there's a lot of experience coming back. But because people don't know the quarterback, do you feel like people are actually selling USC short?
They might be, you know, but let's be honest. They stunk last year. I mean, they went from preseason number one to 7-6, losing in a bowl game they clearly didn't want to be in, to an awful Georgia Tech team who didn't even deserve to be in a bowl game. So you're not going to get much benefit of the doubt with that. Having said that, whoever wins a starting job is going to throw to the best receiving combination in the country. Marquise Lee is fantastic, and Nelson Aguilar, who is a big-time recruit, has blossomed. Anybody who saw him in the spring saw he's as advertised. The issue for them is really going to be the offensive line, which is, as USC has kind of backslid to normalcy or whatever you want to call it, just not to say mediocrity, because they're better than mediocre, but their offensive line's just been pretty average, and that has to get better, especially with the new quarterback. And we'll see, because a lot of, you know, they have experience up front, but those guys have to step up, and we'll see. I mean, most people assumed Max Wittig, who was the starter at the end of last year when Barkley got hurt, he's a big kid with a big arm, but his accuracy was shaky, that he's going to be the guy. Cody Kessler, I thought, actually seemed to outplay him, and we'll see. I mean, Cody Kessler is more of a scrambler. I don't want to call him totally a dual-threat guy, but his mobility's a little better. But, you know, I think they can win with either guy. I just don't know how much they can win. Can either guy make them a 9-4 team? They play 13 games in the regular season. I don't know if they're, you know, because I think their front seven should be very good on defense. So I do think they have enough talent, like you say, to be in the top 20. But are they anywhere near where people project them to be at the start of last year? No, I don't think so.
Right, and you mentioned defense. They need to get better on defense, and I'm curious, from your vantage point, why didn't Monty Kiffin work there?
You know, it's hard to say for sure. I think you have to start with, quite honestly, you have a guy in his mid-70s. I mean, there's a big difference between Nick Saban being 61 and somebody being in their mid-70s now. You could throw that back in my face and say Bill Snyder's like 80.
Yeah, at least.
Know, he does works wonders there. So I don't know if it's just a communication thing with communicating both to his coaches and to his players. I think there was – I don't think it's a scheme thing. I know a lot of people said, oh, the 3-4 is the 4-3 is antiquated. I mean, if you have good players – if you have great players, you can win with anything. I don't buy that, you know, that it's that. But I just don't think guys were very confident in the scheme. And ultimately, when things happened, whether, you know, you can even look at the Stanford game. It wasn't like their defense was a mess in that game. But when they needed to get off the field, they couldn't. And that wasn't against Kevin Hogan. You know, that was before Kevin Hogan even got there. And obviously, they've had issues with Oregon, but they had big issues at Arizona. You know, and I think ultimately what compounds it, and Lane Kiffin talked about this when I spoke to him the other day, was we really can't afford to keep shooting ourselves in the foot like they did. And they had a lot of problems with turnovers in that Arizona game. And then once that happened, and this gets back to my point, is when things snowball, and they did last year, because right after, you know, both Marquise Lee and I'm blanking on the middle linebacker I just saw. But both players at Pac-12 Media Day just said, you know, that was the turning point for them. And I think when you have guys whose confidence isn't all the way there, because it's almost like, hey, we've seen bad things happen, that's when you have problems. And I think that's what happened with Monty Kiffin's defense there.
All right. I'm assuming you mean Hayes Pillard.
I did. Thank you.
Yeah, I'm going to go to the team that has probably benefited well that you just mentioned, benefited well as USC has slid down a little bit, and that's Stanford as they've ascended to the top of the conference. The big narrative with them appears to be a really, really excellent front seven, but on offense, they do lose a good chunk of their playmakers. To what extent do you feel like Kevin Hogan is going to have to be much more dynamic with that offensive line for Stanford to get back to that point?
You know, I don't think he needs to turn into Johnny Manziel by any stretch or RG3. And at Stanford, they're not going to ask you to do that. You know, I think he's going to continue to progress. And I think from talking to David Shaw, you know, he thinks he's a budding superstar. I've talked to a lot of guys who've been around Kevin Hogan who think the world of him as a future prospect in terms of pocket sense and the presence around a team, and he's a really good athlete with good size, and he'll continue to, you know, get polished as a passer. The thing that holds them back, and I have them projected to win the league, but the thing that to me holds them back from being a team that could overtake, say, Alabama or win a national title, I just don't know if they have any difference makers, you know, at the skill slots. I mean, they had good tight ends, and those guys are gone. The tight ends who are there are big and pretty athletic, but are they reliable? You know, a lot of people were concerned. They saw that guys just in the spring really struggled to hang on to the football. The receivers, you know, David Shaw was telling me that the thing is, you know, to have these 40 or 50-yard gains in the pass game, you know, they don't always have to be bombs. They, you know, but do they have a guy who can take a 7-yard slant and go 40? And they haven't had that. You know, they kind of had that at one point, and they flipped Sherman to be a defensive back years ago. And since then, you know, is Kelsey Young that guy? Who knows? Is Ty Montgomery? I mean, those guys, you know, they need somebody to really have a breakout year and be a special guy. You know, not just a tailback. They need a receiver to show that. But, you know, offensive line, I think their offensive line is as good as there is on the West Coast. I think their defense, it's not just the front seven. Their safety is probably the best safety tandem in the country. I mean, you're that good up the middle, and you're that good of a tackling team, it really bodes well for what you can dictate to an offense. They may have the best defense in the country, you know, considering all that they have coming back. Shane Scove is a really good player. He'll be a lot better this year because he wasn't 100% last year. He's in much better shape. I think he will be an impact guy more so than he was even in 2012. You know, the other thing I would say I really like about Stanford, and I talked to Marcus Mariota about this, and having been out to Stanford and done a Derek Mason story and you know, seen both the Peter King site and Grantland, Chris Brown did really good sites on kind of on Derek Mason, but you know, I guess the Monday Morning Quarterback site was more on Derek Mason than maybe Chris Brown's was. But it was really on how teams cope with zone read and you know, kind of like how they deal with Oregon, for lack of a better term, and for this purpose.
Right.
The thing Mariota told me was, and I've heard this a couple of times from people in the, you know, in the league who studied it, as well as another coach I know who studied, who spent a lot of time with Derek Mason, is their scheme wasn't that different. What Stanford's great at is they tackle well in space, better than anybody else did. Mariota said that, you know, that's the thing that stood out about him. It wasn't like their scheme was just that different. It's just this team really, really tackles well in space. And that's not, you know, for our purposes, that's not a very sexy thing to, you know, it kind of goes back to a fundamental thing. But I think when Stanford is so well coached, mm-hmm. you know, I think that's why I don't think Kevin Hogan needs to be RG3 or Johnny Manziel. They will win games 24-17, 20-13, and I think they know that.
All right, and we'll go with that. So with Chip Kelly gone, David Shaw is now the most accomplished coach at his school within the conference. And it's always fair with the history of college coaches to ask if he has one eye on the pros, if he has the ego to move to the NFL. Do you think he's going to be – obviously Stanford has built that program into a sustainable year-after-year machine through recruiting, through coaching. Does David Shaw have the personality where he will look around after 2-3 Rose Bowls, or do you feel like because of everything that he has said with graduating and a Stanford degree and players and building a program in a different way that he is, for lack of a better term, a lifer?
I mean, I'll always be surprised. Whenever it's a guy who has spent some time in the NFL and he came, you know, he has a big-time NFL background, you know, I always think that if they have success in college, eventually they end up finding their way to the NFL. You know, and I know that they're always going to deny it until they leave. I think in a case like that, I would be surprised if when he's 50 and he, you know, he's still successful, I'd be surprised if he's still at Stanford. I just think there's going to be so much opportunity. A lot of those guys, you know there are, it's more of a football world in the NFL than it is in college. That's not to say that, you know, at Stanford, maybe you don't have as many, you probably have different headaches, I guess, than you do at some other schools. But
right.
A lot of coaches know that when they go away, they dread, they always check their cell phone. Is it going to ring? What's the problem that's coming? You know, who got a DUI? Who got this? Whatever. In the NFL, it's just a different dynamic. And so, you know, if you ask me to bet one or the other, I would say eventually I think he's going to end up in the NFL.
In the same region, what makes Sonny Dykes better for this roster of Cal players in the short term, who he has obviously to deal with, than what Jeff Tedford was able to do these past couple of years?
I think what Jeff Tedford was kind of ailed by was he'd been there a long time and he'd made a bunch of changes on the staff and or had a lot of changes, whether they were his decision or other people's decision. I think, you know, he's a terrific coach, and he really worked wonders with a program that was awful before he got there. But eventually, I think he just kind of ran out of steam. And I think what Sonny Dykes brings is a lot of energy there, and he has a plan. He's very, very determined on what he's going to do. I think some recruits are already buying in. When I was at the opening, which was the, you know, the big kind of recruiting bazaar for, you know, elite kids up in Portland, there were a lot of kids there who were either committed to Cal or intrigued by Cal and speaking very highly of Sonny Dykes. You know, he's a really smart guy. I think that for people who don't know much about him, if you spend some time, you kind of see he's one of those guys who I think Sonny Dykes would work well. Don't just because his dad's name is Spike and he comes from Texas, don't think he comes in, you know, with a tumbleweed, you know, following him. He's different. And I think he'll handle it well there. Now, what's challenging for him, he's got to figure out who his quarterback is. Is it going to be Zach Klein? You know, whoever it's going to be new. The receivers are young, but they are talented. You know, we know Brandon Bigelow, super explosive kid, but he didn't even play in the spring. So, I mean, those are big question marks for what they do. When he was at Louisiana Tech, he didn't take over a great situation at all from Derek Dooley. And one of the things Sonny Dykes was able to do was he hit on a lot of JC kids and was able to go kind of turn it pretty quick within 2 years. I don't think he's going to have that luxury at obviously at Cal. And also, he's in a much tougher league. I mean, that's not an easy division he's in, especially how well Stanford is doing. You know, Oregon, even without Chip Kelly, they're not falling off the map. And, you know, I think Washington recruits really well. So he's punching up right now, and I think people have to be patient with him. But I do think he's got a lot of good energy there. And he also has great facilities now, and that's something Jeff Tedford did not have. I mean, if you, anybody's been out to Cal in the last 6 months, and you look at that stadium, you would be blown away. Now, I don't know who's paying for it, but just in terms of what they have, you know, recruits don't worry about accounting. You know, they just want to come see. It's like, wow, my stadium rocks. And, you know, I noticed one of the kids who's committed there, Luke Rebenzer, who's a really, you know, he's a shorter dual-threat quarterback who's an Elite 11 kid. I noticed he and one of the top defensive backs in Southern California are both committed. You know, their avatar is the new Cal Stadium. So I think that speaks to one of the things Sonny Dykes can sell.
Let's move back to the South for a second. As Dan mentioned on a previous show, Vegas is selling UCLA this season. Right now, I checked, it's still at 7, the over-under for win total. If you look at UCLA, obviously they lose Jonathan Franklin. That's a lot of production from last season that they need to replace. They've got a secondary with a lot of talent, but not necessarily a whole lot of experience. Are you at all surprised by that over-under, even given some of the challenges that UCLA has to overcome this season?
I am, because their offensive line, which was so young last year, should be better with a lot of seasoning. They had, to me, the best defensive player in the conference, Anthony Barr, who is a nightmare for anybody to deal with. And I think Brett Hundley's only going to be better with it. You know, having been around him this spring, he's physically stronger. He's gotten a lot bigger. He has taken over. It's hard for a kid to be the leader of a program as a freshman, and or even as a redshirt freshman, as was the case. And I think that, you know, even though he had the respect of his teammates, you know, Jim Mora didn't want to go that route. Well, now it's clearly his team. Jonathan Franklin's moved on. Hundley's taken over. I mean, I like that. You know, they're going to miss Jonathan Franklin, not just his personality, but obviously his production. The thing that I suspect why Vegas isn't as sold, their schedule does not set up very well.
Right.
You know, they have Nevada early. Nevada's pretty good. I mean, they have a really good quarterback, and even though it's a new coach, it's not like they're a bad team. Then they got to go to Nebraska, and that's not going to be easy. You know, and then they have the double up in, you know, I remember writing about this earlier this spring, they have the double up in the Pacific Northwest, which is at Stanford and then Oregon, you know, and that easily could go 0-2 on that swing back-to-back week, especially considering it's Stanford then Oregon. So you have the more physical team first, so it's like taking about 5 body punches, and then you have to go chase Oregon around, you know, and then at the end of the year, I don't think it's easy either, because they go ASU and then at USC. So it's I think they'll win more than 7.5, but I have them to win the division, but it's tough for me, given that kind of that double that they have in late October on the road, to see them, you know, as a top 10 team. I think they'll probably look at, you know, maybe going 10-3, 9-4, you know, after the conference title game.
Another team that others have picked to win that division, Arizona State. Some have them winning just the South. I've seen a few that have them winning the whole thing. 7.5 is your over-under. Are you buying, are you selling the hype for Arizona State?
I'm not as much on the hype with them either. You know, I think that, you know, people may not love him as a person, but he is a pretty good coach. I mean, you look at what he did last year. The biggest thing I think Todd Graham improved with from his predecessor was they knocked off the stupid penalties, and that was really what was killing Arizona State. You know, but again, early on, you look at their schedule, and they play, I think, 3 of their first 5 games, maybe even 4 of their first 5 games, are against, like, real physical teams. You know, it's like they have a tune-up out of the gate. Then they go Wisconsin at Stanford. They play USC, which it's not like USC is a finesse team. And then they got Notre Dame. I mean, that's not an easy stretch to kind of get momentum going. I mean, I think they'll be lucky to be 3-2 out of that first 5 games. So I haven't picked third in the division. I think that they'll be, you know, a bowl team, but I don't see them as a team that's going to be in the top 25 this year. I mean, I know that Will Sutton is an explosive guy, and he's bulked up clearly. I mean, I saw that last week at Media Day, but you know, I don't look at their offense and think, okay, their offense is an Oregon offense or their offense. I just think it's productive, but I don't think it's quite where it's going to need to be to win that division.
Let's go back up north. We talked about Oregon a little bit in the context of Stanford and UCLA, but obviously the big story is Mark Helfrich taking over a program that really has nowhere to go but down. My question to you is, one of the things that Chip Kelly did really well, aside from install that manic, really quick offense, is he basically ran the program in his image. He overhauled everything and was a force of personality, recruiting, coaching, with the media, whatever the case may be. It really was University of Chip Kelly. Does Mark Helfrich have that in him to continue that sort of day-to-day buy-in element?
I think he does. I mean, everybody I've talked to inside the program is saying the right thing about him. I think it helps that he basically lost only Jerry Azzanaro from the staff. And Jerry Azzanaro is a good defensive line coach, but, you know, there is so many guys there who know what the program was built on. I mean, Chip Kelly also inherited those guys, too, and I think that eased the transition. I mean, he had that awful debut at Boise that night, but beyond that... you're right. There was a lot of Chip Kelly. I thought the best thing Chip Kelly did in talking to Ifo, their really good little defensive back, the other day, the one thing we got to talking about was Chip Kelly's confidence that permeated the rest of the team, which was, and I think you guys both pick up on this too, there's definitely a smugness that comes with Chip Kelly, and I don't necessarily mean that in a really bad way, but you can tell he thinks he's really smart. And the players thought, Chip Kelly thinks he's the smartest coach they're going to face or they're going to be on the field with. And that gave them a lot of confidence. And that doesn't mean they won't have that confidence in Mark Helfrich, but for any first-time head coach, and that's what he is, I think that, there could be some growing pains. And, what's a positive for Mark Helfrich, in addition to all the experience around him, is the talent around him, the athletes that he has, especially on defense, are better than what they were 5 years ago when Chip Kelly took over. I mean, they just are. They have better defensive backs. They have bigger, longer guys in the front seven. So, and also Chip Kelly, as I recall, and I remember talking to him about this, like after that first season, the interior line he had, and I remember being at the Boise State game where they were just dreadful trying to move the ball. Their two guards and their center were so overmatched, they were not ready to be there. I think this thing that Mark Helfrich takes over is much more, game ready, never mind that his quarterback, Marcus Mariota, has just much more talent than what Chip Kelly had in terms of being a dual threat guy. And I think they just have a lot more depth, too.
So am I reading you correctly in saying that this is actually, when you look at the roster, when you look at the depth everywhere, perhaps the most talented team on paper that Oregon has had since, the Chip Kelly, Mike Bellotti surge into the national spotlight?
I think it is from depth in terms of good secondary. I mean, there were things that Chip Kelly had that were really good at times. Now, I think they're going to miss some of the experience and the savvy they had up the middle of the defense last year. Obviously, Deion Jordan is a freaky athlete, or else he wouldn't have gone as high as he did in the draft. But just in terms of the two linebackers, they were really solid guys. The safety was a good player. I think they will miss those guys, but Marcus Mariota is going to be a lot better this year. When we talked the other day, we were talking about that Stanford game. There were some passes he missed, which a lot of people look at that and go, no one's bragging about Stanford if he's sharper in that game. Not only has he missed some of those passes, he also just made some bad decisions, and I think he will probably not make as many of those decisions just because he's physically a bigger kid. And can take more of the pounding and be, stronger in the pocket. But I just think his experience is better, and I think that really helps him. And I think that the caliber of some of those young defensive linemen who played early last year, I mean, those are guys who will be NFL big-time guys. Those are like SEC kind of guys. And I think that really helps them. Those guys now have another year of experience. So, the names will be a little different on defense, but I think this is a really, really good situation he took over, in addition to the fact that now the NCAA sanctions that cloud, that questionable cloud, is long gone.
All right, another team that has had the expectations but not necessarily fulfilled them is Washington. They took a really good step forward on defense last year, especially along the front seven as they wove Shaq Thompson into the linebacker position, and Danny Shelton and Josh Shirley did very good things on the defensive line under new defensive coordinator Josh Wilcox. My question to you is, what is a fair expectation regarding Washington's 2013, and what indication is there that offensively they'll be better?
A couple things. All right, so I would say they are going to win more than seven this time. You know, I think they are going to push through that. But why I think they'll be better is I think they have more experience on the offensive line. That is a big place to start. Last year, and, you know, I talked about this with Keith Price, you know, kind of why you backslid last year. And, you know, he told me straight up that I didn't really trust my teammates. And that's a heavy thing for anybody to say, especially for a guy who's still in the program. But, you know, you start with replacing four offensive linemen, and I think you have a guy who was really, and it's kind of a guy who comes from a dual threat background and I think was trying to do too much, and that came back to bite him. And then I think he tended to compound his mistakes, and mm-hmm. I don't think he's going to, I do think he's learned from that, and I do think he feels like he's built up confidence with the team. You know, he does have a really good running back behind him in Sankey, and he has a great tight end who probably is going to play every game because it looks like, you know, it looks like Sark's not going to keep Safarian Jenkins out. You know, after his DUI, which means he'll probably play in the Boise State game. And I think that you mentioned some of the younger players and the defense. I mean, the thing that I thought ultimately hurt them, in addition to Keith Price not being great last year, really, really sharp at times, was their secondary. I mean, I watched that Washington State game, and for having an NFL, you know, first-round pick in there, they were really struggling, not just giving up big plays, but also lots of penalties and just – you know, you have to hope that that is going to be better, that they don't kind of shoot themselves in the foot with that. But I do think because the offense is going to be more efficient, and I expect Keith Price to bounce back, I think that this is a team that should win 8 or 9 games. But that may not be good enough for them to get even second in that division, especially because they have to go to Stanford. And again, this is another situation where it's a team that gets the body punch first, and then gets Oregon the next week. You know, they go to Stanford, and then at least they get Oregon at home, but it's still Oregon, you know, the track meet after getting the physical team at Stanford. That's not a good situation.
Bruce, let's move back to the South, and specifically to Arizona. I looked over this team. The defensive line last year really struggled. Part of that, I guess you can attribute to simply not having the personnel in order to run the scheme. You know, they seem to be deeper this season, but do they have the right personnel up front to improve the pass rush, to improve the rush defense, to really get things moving on that side of the ball?
No, I definitely do not think they do. You know, I think Rich Rod's a really, really good coach, and he's eventually going to get them to be a top 15 team, but they are just not big enough. When your quarterback coach is bigger than heavier than most of your defensive linemen, you got some problems. You know, and that's kind of the situation it is. You know, watch the whatever that Western movie preview thing they're showing. I mean, they got guys in the coaching staff who are bigger than the D-line. And that, I think, ultimately, you know, you can only win so many games, you know, 41-38. And I think that that's what's going to hold them back. I mean, they obviously have a great running back in Carey. And I think that, you know, Rich Rod will get quarterbacks to play, whether it's going to be Denker or whoever's going to be the guy. He'll get somebody to be pretty dynamic and as a really good trigger man, but I just don't think offensively now. I mean, they were like 108th or 106th. I forgot what they were on defense.
Yeah,
I'm just not sure that they're close enough to being much better than that. And I don't think that's. I mean, I don't think that means Jeff Castile forgot how to coach. I just think they're just really small, and you know, from being around them in the spring. Or from talking to those guys, that's what's lacking, and that's going to take some time for them to fix it, and they're not close to it right now.
All right, let's move to Utah. Since their Sugar Bowl after the 08 season, their win totals, they've seen a drop-off, 13, 10, 10, 8, 5. They've gone to the tougher conference now, but are you seeing indicators pointing in the right direction that Kyle Whittingham's going to get things back on track? He's going to get them back to the Utah they were before joining the Pac-12? What is the situation at Utah, and which direction is it headed?
I'm not sure. You know, I'm not that confident that he's going to take them and all of a sudden they're going to go win 8 or 9 games. The switching the leagues, I think, I don't want to say Kyle Whittingham is the Pinkle of the West, but there is something from a, you know, he's a good coach who had a lot of success. And then when they went up in class, I think the timing was not great because, you know, for either injuries caught Missouri last year. I think, you know, in regards to this program, I just think that, you know, they were going through some quarterback situation. Their offense was dreadful, and we'll see how much Dennis Erickson helps. I mean, because you have a really young offensive coordinator there in Johnson, and And you know, what I think has made it even trickier for them just is, you know, as much as you say, hey, now that we're in the Pac-12 footprint, we're going to recruit better in California, I just think that some of the things that they were able to do, sometimes you were able to get momentum when you kind of rack up wins against, you know, a team that's probably a 4-8 caliber team, even if they're in another league and they're 6-6, they're probably, that's what they're worth. And, you know, when you miss those and all of a sudden it's just week in and week out of grind, that stuff comes back to get you. And I'm not sure that Utah's more than a 6-6 team this year. I think that you look at what they have in the non-conference game. I mean, BYU is good. Utah State got elevated so much under Anderson that they're not an easy game. So when you're non-conference, you have a chance to go 1-2, or you're lucky to go 2-1, and then you go back into a league where, you know, I guess you look at what they have on paper. I mean, they have a really rough schedule, because I would say that the three most talented teams in the league, they got them. You know, they have to, and I think they have to play two of them on the road. They have to play Oregon on the road. They have to play USC on the road, you know, and then they get Stanford at home. You know, you could throw UCLA in there. They have to play them, obviously, too. It's there's not a lot of easy, you know, it's not an easy schedule for them.
Colorado obviously gets the new football coach this year. It's a program that has not been ranked in a national poll for 7 years. Mike McIntyre from San Jose State, he's a guy with a reputation for building programs. And not to play devil's advocate, Colorado needs a lot of work, and not every builder is created equally. Is McIntyre the right builder for this type of situation?
You know, I think he is. I mean, he's a real positive guy. He's a guy with an NFL background, but also spent a lot of time, you know, around David Cutcliffe. I think he knows about, he's got a good eye for talent. I mean, remember, this is the guy who found Patrick Willis in Tennessee when Tennessee didn't know about him or didn't want him and got him to Ole Miss. I mean, everybody who's played for him really has a connection. He's also the guy who found David Fales. David Fales would be at Indiana State right now. And instead, he's a guy who's going to finish up at San Jose and probably end up in the, you know, first or second round pick next year. Mm-hmm. So I think that is a good sign if you're a Colorado fan. I think it's a good sign if you're a Colorado fan for the future that they have a better athletic director. I mean, that they, you know, the change that they just had, getting a guy who comes from the Texas Rangers who has a football background, I think that's going to be good. But when Mike McIntyre took this job, whether it's Mike McIntyre or obviously Butch Jones, name was brought up a lot for this. I think the biggest question mark is, can you get Colorado back to being a destination job? You know, when you said 7 years, it feels like it's like a dozen years since they were relevant. I mean, it's been a long time, and I think that it's going to take a long time. I mean, they were so bad. Even though his team, when he took over, and they were almost on like the brink of extinction at San Jose State, and they were 1-12 that year, and they didn't have a lot of bodies to finish it, it's harder to go from the bottom in the Pac-12 than it is to go from the bottom in the league he came from. Because back then, at what was the MAC, it was kind of dwindling around him. So the gap was, like, the league was crumbling around him. I just think that the haves and the have-nots is much different in a big league. And it's going to take a while for Colorado, I think, to go, at least even get to be a 7-win team or so. You know, right now, I think if he can get to 4 wins, I think that's positive. I mean, look, when I saw him the other day, we were talking about his schedule. They have Central Arkansas. When you're playing a non-FBS program, it should be a tune-up. Central Arkansas is actually pretty good, and that's something where you almost have to worry about. You know, then they have Fresno, which is, you know, next to Boise, or maybe even included Boise, the best team in the Mountain West. So I'm not sure I see, you know, any more than 3 wins on this schedule. And, you know, he's got to find a quarterback. You know, maybe it's Connor Wood. Maybe it's a freshman he brought in from Washington. But I think you got to be really patient if you're a CU fan. I think you're looking for, you know, can he get 3 or 4 wins this year, 4 or 5 next year, and then maybe can we get to be back in a bowl game by 2015? It's that bad there.
All right, a team with talent level issues, but not nearly on the level of Colorado. It's Washington State. I think a lot of people had unrealistic expectations just because of the sizzle associated with Mike Leach last season. But when you look at 2013, you look at a team now without Jeff Toole and, of course, Marquise Wilson. So the offensive playmakers not as much there. There doesn't seem to be a ton of confidence in Connor Halliday, but they do return a ton on defense, a pretty mediocre defense at best. How far away is Washington State?
Ton of what do they return?
Yeah. How far away are the Cougars?
They're still probably a year away from being a team that can win 7 or 8 games. I think that what hurts them the most, and I was not there this spring, but I was there a year ago in the spring, and the two things that jumped out at me were they were really bad on the defensive line, and they actually have gotten better at that. They had a JC guy who came in and was solid, and that's what they needed, and they had a couple of young guys step up, and they're not terrible on the defensive line, but their offensive line was the worst thing I saw, and it was even worse in the season. I mean, there's a very realistic chance Leach is going to start 4 former walk-ons on the offensive line, which is just mind-boggling, you know, that it is that bleak. And so what you're talking about is a lot of the guys they're bringing in get redshirted, and, you know, those guys, you know, now he has redshirt freshmen who are going to be on the 2-deep. But it's pretty bleak, and I think that people look at it and go, wow, they can't run the football. I don't think the issue – that's a secondary issue. The issue is they can't even hold up to protect. You know, your rushing yardage totals look a lot worse when you have like 10 more sacks given up than the next worst team in Division I. So I think that's the biggest thing first. Never mind, can they run the football at all? It's can they give the quarterback any time? I mean, when you can't run against a 5-man box, you have all kinds of problems. That creates problems. You know, Leach is never going to try to run it 50 times a game. But, you know, when you don't even have any kind of chance to run the ball, it really stops you. Now, I think their offensive line has to be a little better, because they have now, the guys have at least another year in the system. They're a year bigger. I don't think in terms of skill wise, the receivers aren't bad. You know, you mentioned Marquise Wilson. They had a kid step up after Wilson was gone from the team, Dominique Williams, who really, if you watch what he did against Washington, was one of the better young receivers on the West Coast. And Gabe Marks is a good receiver. I think when I talked to some of their coaches who were out here recruiting in the spring, one of the things that you look at is, they have guys who probably would be able to play at some other places, but do they have any difference makers? And I think Gabe Marks is a good young receiver. They've got a kid who gray-shirted last year, Robert Lewis, who's from down here in Los Angeles, who Leach says has some DeSean Jackson kind of explosiveness. They didn't have anything like that last year, but he's a 155-pound guy. You know, so there are some pieces that I think he's starting to get. They need Connor Halliday, who's got a really good arm, and Leach likes a lot of things about him, but he can't be very reckless with the football. I mean, it's good to be a gunslinger, but you can't go way overboard, especially when you're a team that, you know, the talent gap is what it is. You can't afford any turnovers there, and I think ultimately that's what's going to be the growing pains here. We'll see. I mean, Leach seemed pretty confident in Connor Halliday coming out of the spring, and that should bode well. Now, will that translate into them getting close to 6 wins? I don't know. I don't look at the schedule and see 6 wins. I look at the schedule and say, hey, maybe they'll go 5-7 if things break well. But, who knows? I mean, he's won with, you know, sometimes and in ways which, hey, you know what, they don't look like they have that kind of talent. They'll surprise some people, but I think he's going to have to surprise a bunch of people, because I look at what Cal has in terms of big people, and I think Cal has better personnel, at that point you're jockeying for who's the fifth best team in the division.
And to close out the North, Oregon State has a number of players who would start and star at pretty much every school within the conference. When you look at the pair of defensive ends they have, the speedy guys on offense that they bring back in Cooks and Woods, is this Oregon State team built, though, considering what they lose, to improve upon a resurging 2012, or is it a team looking to simply maintain?
It's looking to maintain. You know, don't backslide again. Their defense played really well. They have a very underrated, you know, coaching staff, especially on defense. And you saw that last year. I think what's challenging for them is they got to find out, which quarterback is going to be the guy. I think that inconsistency ultimately, keeps them from being a top 20 team. You know, I think they were a fringe team last year, but when you see what Mike Riley is able to do there, I think he has just kind of a different way about him, and it's something that has translated, and guys are very comfortable there. And they have better, you're right, they have better talent than I believe a lot of people give them credit for. And they have quite a bit of speed. And Brandon Cooks would be a difference maker for a lot of people. And just because I think he's lost a little bit in Corvallis publicity-wise. So we'll see, But ultimately, the biggest thing is, will one of these quarterbacks just take the job over and not flip-flop back? They don't need at this stage to have a quarterback battle. If that's the case, they may not win more than seven games just because the rest of that division, I think, is very good.
All right, and because you've spent so much time with Mike Leach, he cannot be the answer to this question. But if you have to pick one Pac-12 coach to go on a cross-country road trip with, considering ability to change a tire, ability to tell stories, food, somebody you'd want to just spend 40 hours in a van with, who is it?
Ooh, that's a really good question. I like that. It wouldn't be Leach, by the way. I've heard enough from Hal Mumme about their road trips when they were at Iowa Wesleyan. So
what does that mean?
I'm not a Jimmy Buffett guy. I don't need to hear about every Jimmy Buffett story ever told or anything like that.
Okay.
You know what? I'm like kind of going through the. I think it might be Rich Rod. Rich Rod is really funny. Anybody who worked with him, like in the CBS people, he's got a great sense of humor and he's very self-effacing. He'll drink a beer, which would be good for the road, not on the road, obviously, but at some point. I think he's one of the funnier people who is a head coach.
All right, that's fair. And we always close.
If it was assistant coach, Noel Mazzoni would be pretty entertaining. I don't know if I would be able to rely on him to drive or to do, to be there every day. But it would be amusing.
Ty, as we always do with Bruce when we have him at the end of the interview, we give him some trivia.
Oh, we do give him some trivia. That's right.
I am at the ready with 90s trivia.
I was going to say, I'm a bit unprepared for this. All I can do is fire up the soundboard.
Bruce, name three Boys to Men songs.
Why do you keep going to Boys to Men? Are you from, Philadelphia? I'm not going to Boys to Men.
All right, we're not going to Boys to Men. All right, name
I feel like you
one
have a
voice
on
from
when
the.
You ask me these questions in fake glasses.
Yeah. Name one voice actor from The Simpsons.
One voice actor. Was it Dan Hedaya? Is that his name?
Not true. Dan Castellaneta.
Wait a minute. Oh, who's the guy I'm thinking of?
Dan Hedaya is the dad from Clueless.
No, Dan, he was like Nick Tortelli on Cheers.
Correct.
Oh, you're right. Maybe I had a Freudian slip there. Sorry, okay.
All right, what was Will Smith's pseudonym on The Fresh Prince of Bel-Air?
Smith's pseudonym?
Yeah, he went under a fake name on an episode.
I don't know. I didn't really watch that show too often.
Okay, it was Raphael Del Ghetto.
You know what? I think I would have known. I should have known. Sorry.
Okay. Can you name all four Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles?
No, I can't even name one.
Wow.
Really?
Wow.
No.
All four and not even one.
Here's right. one. Here's another. I guess this is considered 90s. In what city does Matlock take place?
This isn't 90s. That's from this is like your
That's a Jerry Palm question.
That's like the 70s.
Well, I'm just throwing it out there, Bruce.
I don't know the answer to that.
Next. This isn't fair.
Atlanta, Georgia.
Okay.
Atlanta, Georgia.
Name a Jermaine Dupri song.
I'm blanking. I'm sorry.
Somebody that Jermaine Dupri dated.
Janet Jackson.
Correct. That is correct. Ty, ding him, please.
There we go. How many of the six friend characters can you name?
Sadly, I think I can name all six. My wife loves that show. When we were in Cancun, it was on every time we were in the hotel, it was on. All right, so, man, what was I drinking last night? I'm blanking on this now, too. Phoebe, Ross, Chandler, Joey, Rachel, and God, she was a character who used to be really fat. Courtney Cox's character.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Monica.
There you go. Oh, that
Correct.
Came through loud. That was louder than I expected. Okay.
That's all right. Who starred on the NBC hit show The Single Guy?
Was The Single Guy that Jonathan Silverman show?
That is correct.
That wasn't a hit, though.
No, not at all.
I'm surprised that was even on for a year.
Yeah, that I think it got 2 years.
I guess we got to ding that one, though, right?
Yes, absolutely.
By the way, if somebody ever played Dan Rubenstein in a sitcom, Jonathan Silverman, I don't know if he's still alive, but he
I'll
could probably
it.
Get that role.
He's still introduced at, like, the Dodger Celebrity Hollywood All-Star Game as, like, from NBC's The Single Guy, which I think is totally unfair.
Especially for L.A. I mean, they could...
Yeah.
I could see if we're talking about, like, the Mobile Bay Bears game or something or whatever, but
sure.
It's L.A., you know?
No, you have to do better than
All
that.
All right, I got two more here we can go with.
Go, Ty.
How are you with Saved by the Bell?
That's where I was going.
I'm not that good with Saved by the Bell.
All right, are you better with Seinfeld than Saved by the Bell?
Yes, I am, yeah.
How long was the sentence that Seinfeld and his crew received in the series finale?
Oh, I don't know. I remember that episode. I remember the end of it, but I don't remember the sentence.
Do you know, Dan?
10 years?
1 year, I believe.
Oh, 1 year.
Is the final answer. All right, I won't ask the...
Would you have really known that if you didn't look it up?
I would have.
I would not have.
I would have known that, actually. Yeah.
While we're on Seinfeld, let me jump in here for a thing. So,
please.
And this is an Andy Staples story, and we all love Andy Staples stories. So,
yep.
A couple of weeks ago, I'm driving through the Deep South, and I'm looking for somewhere to eat, and my taste buds are pretty limited, so I'm like, hey, can I just find a Quiznos or whatever? And I'm pulling off the road in Prattville, Alabama, which is like, I don't know, a half hour from Birmingham. And I see a sign that says Jim and Nick's Barbecue. And I'm thinking, so whenever it's a barbecue-related thing in the South, Andy Staples is like my Yelp. So I text him immediately, Andy, what do you know about Jim and Nick's? And he doesn't respond to me. I don't know, rapidly, and so whatever. So I just go in. But I remembered him talking about it, so I was like, well, if he was talking about it, it must be good. And then as I sit down, I got Andy Staples giving me his you know, thumbnail guide on why he likes it, you know, where it ranks in barbecue and whatever. And in the back of my head, I just kept on thinking there was a Seinfeld episode where Jerry and George are kind of conspiring to see how Jerry can pull off the roommate switch.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And George at one point goes, aren't you glad you have access to my dementia? Every time I'm on the road and I think of where am I going to eat, I think of, isn't it a good thing I have access to Andy Staples' dementia when it comes to food?
That's switch. There you go.
On that very specific note, I'm going to go to the first trivia question we gave you, or first hypothetical question. Which college football media member do you think would serve you best as a car mate on a cross-country road trip?
I mean, Andy's knowledge of food and stuff, I mean, he's a very valuable person to have. He's good with directions.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's good. I got to say, Brett McMurphy is very entertaining for me.
Like, okay.
We have actually, he's old, a little older, but his musical interests aren't that far. Surprised me that they're not that far off from what I like. I would probably go with Andy just because of the, you know, he's kind of the dad on things. Like, he really has, like, kind of a, he could be a good Chevy Chase on vacation. He'll know where to go. He'll take charge. He'll handle directions. He's very responsible. He could be your driver if you want to have a couple of drinks or more than a couple. So, but I mean,
all right.
The whole food knowledge, that's pretty big.
I aspire to that. That's the goal. That's the light at the end of the food tunnel.
Yeah, I mean,
that's
he's really good with that. I mean, and he does research on things like that or whatever. So,
oh yeah, who's in the most entertaining college football media member Big Brother house?
Most entertaining.
So not like a place you would want to hang, but a place you would want to watch on TV.
Oh, Thayer Evans has some moments where he can be pretty entertaining if I was watching on TV. I don't know. It's not really a real dynamic group here.
No, it's not at all. That's why it's a difficult question.
Yeah. I mean, I could put Thayer in a house with some people where, you know, maybe there would be like, it would be like Big Brother drama clashes, you know.
I could watch that. The answer is Spencer Hall.
Yeah, you know, that's true. He would be good. We'd have to do something. We'd have to make sure he had enough buttons on the shirt, because I got, sadly, I took a picture of him with all the chest hair and its glory on my, when
I... Is that your lock screen on your phone?
It's like having something off Google that you can't delete. So every time I look at it, I'm like,
oh, you can't look away.
It's like the portrait of Kramer.
This is actually a little more disturbed, though. So,
sure.
Yeah, I would put Spencer in the house. The only thing is, Spencer, like, I was out with him the first night of the, maybe it was the first night or the night before the SEC media days, and I vaguely remember we were in a bar. It's like 2 a.m. He's talking about like Chinese politics to me. And I'm not an intellectual at 8 o'clock at night, much less at 2 a.m. And so I don't know. I don't know how engaging that would be for people to watch on the Big Brother house.
Right. But he would also yell "Roll Tide" and give him the business and do that just sporadically for no reason, which I feel like adds a nice element.
He's smart. He's definitely probably the, you know, all BS aside, probably the most intelligent person would be in that house.
All right. Well, on the note of Spencer's chest hair time.
Yeah, this has been an enlightening conversation, Bruce. We will have to invite you back at some point in the near future.
We should do just an only trivia show with Bruce.
I've been calling for that for months now.
Only trivia, only stories. Forget about this college football nonsense.
What I'm thinking is we invite a few media members on.
Yeah. What are you thinking about here?
Well, I don't know. I mean, maybe you can solicit some names here, but we invite a few people on the show.
Dr. Jerry Palm.
I was thinking that Dr. Jerry Palm at the BCS, like, impromptu thing was very impressive. He knew more white trivia than almost anybody. Once you started getting into anything else, it was definitely...
Yeah, he didn't have the Boys to Men songs.
No. But we could invite a multitude of people on, and we can just edit it real tight so we've got a couple back-to-back-to-back and play some sort of trivia game here. That'd be wonderful.
I'm in.
If you do this, I'm going to nominate. I have a buddy of mine who does college or does NBA, who is the king of BS stuff and all this stuff with the bad show trivia or whatever. I suggest you have him on.
All right,
so, done.
We can do this.
Yeah, so I'm gonna nominate him to come on the show.
He can be one of our executive producers, Bruce.
It would be good. I mean, his idea of multitasking is watching Night Court reruns at 3 a.m. and playing Brick Breaker. So I think he's right in your wheelhouse.
All right. Again, his name, Bruce Feldman. Find his fine work all over there at CBSSports.com, as well as the television network. Bruce, always a pleasure. We will talk to you soon.
Thanks, guys, and sorry for screwing up Hayes Pillard. I'll be kicking myself for that for the next 24 hours.
All good.
All right, Dan, again, Bruce Feldman from CBS, always a good time. We keep coming back to this trivia thing with him. I think maybe we're on to something there.
He really likes it, and I really like it, so I say we just keep going with it, despite his lack of really specific Jermaine Dupri knowledge.
So if we are compiling, let's say, a cast of 4 college football media types to come on here and do trivia... We can't include Bruce because he's already the executive producer.
True. Right, you should also know my computer's at 2% right now.
2%. Okay.
Yeah.
I
say Dr. Jerry Palm. I say Andy Staples. Spencer Hall knows too much about too many things. Who would be a good entertainment option right there?
Well, you know what? Let's leave it at that. Your computer's about to die. Yeah. Send us your thoughts. solidverbal@gmail.com. Let us know who you think should round out the field. Dan, I will talk to you again on Wednesday.
Yes, you will.
All right. Big thanks again to Bruce Feldman, again from CBS, for dropping on by, letting us know what he thinks about this year's Pac-12. In the meantime, for that guy over there in beautiful and sunny New York City, for myself, Ty, here in good old Allentown, thanks again for tuning in. Catch you all in a few days. In the meantime, stay solid.
Peace.